Intro music.
Hey everyone, I'm Ashley.
And I'm Rachel.
And you're listening to Ambitious, Broke, and Saucy,
Filmmaking on a Budget,
the Ben Fabish interview.
We met Ben a while back when we created a traveling theater group, Third Act Theater Troupe, and needed someone for our summer show called One Nation Under God. We had a specific jacket bought for the show, and after his audition, decided that if the jacket fit, he was going to get the part. Thus, Ben walked into our lives. The jacket fit him, and we're so grateful that it did. Mm-hmm. He became a member of our lovely film family, is hysterical, a great friend, and is always willing to lend a hand, and has learned about the filming process right along with us.
What can I say about Ben? He is one of the kindest, sweetest, most compassionate, talented young men that I know. We've never had to ask more than once, and sometimes not at all, for him to pitch in and lend a helping hand. He has generously contributed his talents in the arts, special effects makeup, and his incredible improvisational skill to our two films. It is a pleasure to introduce him to our listening audience. Yes, he is just as delightful in real life as he appears on the screen. And no, he's not really that bad at basketball.
Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Let's start with acting in No Lost Cause. Did you have a favorite moment or a scene from the film?
Nils Hamilton was one of the guys that introduced me to you all in your theater group. So, like, acting with him was super comfortable. And so any of the parts that we had together was just fun because we're used to, just as friends, like, one-upping each other and everything.
Right, right.
Any of those parts, I think we kind of improvised one of the scenes where we were at your all's house actually filming.
Right.
It's kind of one of the first times that him and Caitlin in the movie, we were talking to each other, and he brought me over and introduced me. And
your character to Beth
And Ben. And then the whole time, he was kind of like, had been telling her, like, I have this friend, and he's kind of thinks he's greater than he is, and I came over and like, was exactly that way. But yeah, that was really fun, just working with Nils and then with all of y'all, but he kind of helped me.
So was that scene in, when you're introduced to Beth Ann, is that your favorite scene that you filmed?
It's kind of hard to say what my favorite was. It was just fun being on the whole set with everyone. There was a couple of scenes where we got to improv. Like the basketball scene was really fun, just because we just went at it.
And some of the things that didn't make the final cut in the basketball scene were just so funny.
The basketball scene was very, very long.
The Justin Bieber shot.
Yes. And so we had to choose between Double Rainbow and Justin Bieber. So I went with Double Rainbow.
It was a tough choice. And they just kept behind the camera. They just kept being like, "All right, do something crazier." And then me and Nils just going back and forth. It was really fun.
There was a competition between the two of them, and I remember when I gave Ben the part, he said, "It's the lead, right?" I was like, no, Nils has the lead.
And that was the blow.
Yeah, that was a low blow.
Well, you said I've known Nils longer. So sort of the reason. Okay, this sort of leads into my question, which is for both Rachel and Ben. I mentioned in my intro of Ben what a great improviser he was. How much of Scott, Rachel, was written on the page, and how much of it became what Ben improvised into the character? And do you have a favorite improv Scott moment? And tell us more about that infamous basketball scene.
When I was writing the character, for most of the characters that are in the film, I based them on the people that actually portrayed them.
Right.
Ben is very much the comedic relief in our life.
Yes.
He always has a smile on his face, and he always brings funny jokes along to the table.
You know?
So when I was writing his character, it definitely was the comedic relief. But we got to do a lot of improv with his character, too, so he got to let his light shine a lot through it, too. The basketball scene definitely was his improving...
Now, when you originally wrote it, for those who haven't seen the film, it is a scene, Ben's character, Scott, is convinced that he is a great basketball player. And in the scene, we see what kind of basketball player he actually is, which is horrible. He doesn't make any shots. He misses the basket. At one point, he just throws it straight up in the air. But he thinks that he is that great. And at the end of the scene, he looks at Nils' character and says, "We're tied, right?"
Yeah, right.
It's just... He's delusional.
He is delusional. And that scene is actually based on a scene from a movie called Along Came Polly with Ben Stiller, Jennifer Aniston. And I'm not a big romantic comedy person, but this particular scene, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it.
Yeah.
I can't laugh without thinking.
Goggles.
It is so funny. That scene right there, I was like, this is it right here.
Yeah, this is the moment.
Yeah, and I in another scene in the movie, I played basketball at least twice, I think, in the movie, maybe three times. But yeah. In another scene, I'm like practicing my basketball skills.
Right. Yeah.
And it's almost worse than when game time rolls around.
Yeah.
And let's see. The big moment in the film, too, where the conflict really arises is during a date.
Right.
And that scene, you were not written into it at mm-hmm. all.
No.
But you were there. We were using your house. And, you know, whatever. Come on through. Break the tension a little bit.
Yeah.
So
I remember
that. Was improv.
I would do that. Just be sitting there helping behind the scenes or whatever and just be sitting there like, I could be in the scene that way. No, shoot that one. No, this way. And then finally I'd come up with one that I thought might be feasible. And I'd be like, hey, Rachel, hey, Ashley, think about this.
And like, we'd be like, all right, sure.
And the hat. Yeah. I can't stop thinking about the hat either.
Tell them about the hat.
Okay, there's this hideous looking hat.
America.
It was awful. It's huge and chunky. And
it looked like the American flag.
It was
though.
The American flag in the
on
form
a baseball
of a hat.
Right.
It was awful.
Right. And Ben kept sneaking it into the scenes.
It
made it into one scene.
It did.
I actually got it from Ashley.
Yes.
Because she was cleaning out a house or
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that. And
yeah.
It was there. And she's like, oh, look through, see if you want anything. And I saw the hat and I was like, yes.
I want this American hat.
This is what symbolizes freedom.
And most of the time, I could wear it on my head. Freedom is on
yeah,
my head.
Freedom is on my head.
No, but he would put it in. He would just sneak it in. Like, I couldn't see it. And there's only one scene. I can't even remember what the scene is right now. I've probably blocked it from my memory.
I think it's behind somebody. It's on a hat rack
yeah,
somewhere.
He snuck it in one time and I didn't catch it.
Out of
yeah.
like 100 times. Out,
yeah, he tried. Bless his heart, he tried.
Or it's either on a hat rack or it is in Beth Ann's moving boxes.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one
made
it in.
I can't remember either.
I know he tried both.
Oh, yeah.
He I tried. Think that my favorite Scott scene is the scene at the very end where
yes, I know what you're
with
talking
the brownie
about.
Pan yeah. and oh, you take yeah. the handle breaks off the brownie pan, but it's just the culmination. I feel like when he was first introduced to Beth Ann that she sort of terrified him.
Yeah.
And the whole movie, he's just slightly terrified of Beth Ann, and she confronts him. He's like, hey. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know Beth Ann.
I don't know anything.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he has a slight confidence issue. Like he kind of has like the spectrum. He has like an overconfidence, which he plays all the time.
Yeah.
But like inside, because of that,
he's really insecure.
It really, yeah. yeah. It's because like there are issues there, which probably will be addressed in the sequel. But, but yeah, she definitely, just because he, you know, got started off on the wrong foot with her, you know, getting told she got informed of his basketball skills without
yeah, they were
him
bad.
Really getting a chance to show them to her.
Do you have a favorite improv moment? Like,
I was actually thinking about that one scene where I got an extra part written in. That was kind of a triumph for me
yeah.
personally because I had been trying that.
The
so
one where
times.
You break into their fight?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you wanna go? Hey.
Yeah.
I mean, call
and then
me.
I think on it, I was like, you gonna call me? And he was like, yeah. And then I was walking out, and over my shoulder, I was like, well. If that means anything anymore.
Yeah. There are so many, you would do it differently every time, and it was so hard for me to choose which one was the funniest. Because
mm-hmm.
I thought they were all funny. So I had to think, well, what will other people think is funny? It's all great.
Well, a funny moment that we had was when we were filming a second basketball scene,
mm-hmm.
and it was... Every time we filmed a basketball scene for this movie, it was the two coldest days
it was.
Shooting, and they were both outside. Yeah,
and it was early October, so you
yeah.
wouldn't think it would be that
no,
cold.
No, not
but
down
it was
here.
Freezing.
Mm-hmm. So the second one that we filmed was at night. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and
he was in shorts
and a t-shirt. And it was written that way. I mean,
I know.
You know, I said it would be funnier if it was this way. So let's just do it. Yay! We had that. Blowtorch or whatever it was mm-hmm. that was warming the flamethrower.
Car running in the yeah. background.
We had to stick him in the car in between takes because his nose kept getting so cold and red.
It'd be
yeah.
red in the back. Is your nose red still? All right, stay in there longer. All right. Come out and shoot real quick.
Go back in. So that was fun.
Everybody was all bundled up.
So. Yes, we were. We were in coveralls and scarves and Russian hats.
Orbit. You had a Russian hat. Nobody else had a Russian hat.
I did. Tyler had one on? Tyler had one on.
Tyler has his Timmy Pearson hat on
oh,
all the
yeah.
time with the green
oh,
and then
okay,
the little
okay,
tassel
okay.
thingies.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to behind the scenes for No Lost Cause. We've talked a lot about how everyone in the cast was also in the crew. Can you talk a little bit about what your different jobs were behind the camera, such as lights or makeup? And did you have a job that you liked better than any of the others? And do you remember any funny behind the scenes moments from No Lost Cause?
Yeah, I mean, everybody in the film helped out in little parts here and there, just however they could. If something needed held or moved or plugged in or unplugged or whatever. I think a couple of things I remember from behind the scenes was in that one scene with Nils and Caitlin, I was like standing on a couch holding a light box or something.
That's right, you
over their
were.
Head for the whole scene. And like, you know, that was what I was doing. But it was kind of fun to be like in that position on their scene because it was like, wow, they're just amazing. And
yeah.
And they kept retaking it and retaking
yeah.
it. But yeah, there was that time. And then during Tim's sermon that he did.
I was hoping you would say this. This is what I was going to talk about.
There was two funny things. Is I was standing, there was like a window on the side of the church that there was direct sunlight coming in and like bleaching him out or whatever.
Yes.
So
yes.
I had to stand there with like a big reflector or something to cover that window, and I was just standing there holding it the whole time because we don't have enough money to buy something to prop that up on there. But, so
we use people.
Yes.
Yes.
And child labor, it's way to go. But
yeah.
Anyway, I was sitting there holding that, and then poor Tyler was sitting there holding a boom mic in a sermon.
Oh, gosh.
It was amazing, but it went on for probably like 20 minutes.
It was 11-minute sermon.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, the pain felt like 20 or 30. But I felt worse for Tyler. And then the funniest thing was is that we realized after shooting the whole thing with Tyler holding that boom mic is that the podium that he was preaching on had a mic stand on it or whatever. So we could have just sat the mic
yes.
right there after the whole thing. And, like, Tyler, like, couldn't move his arms.
His arms were just stuck
the
position.
Yeah, locked
above
his head.
I felt bad about that.
Yeah.
No,
but only for a moment.
He can only do boom mic, you know. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember you following us when we were doing our little projector cart dolly track.
Uh-huh.
And you would follow us around. I can't remember why I think it was the cord. You were holding
yeah.
the cord or something following us around.
Yeah, and there was another time where, and we found, like, a character from Lion King.
Timon.
It was Timon. There we
yes.
go, sorry. But it was Timon, and I would take him and just place him on different spots in eye line of, of the actors.
Wait,
so
what?
Every once in a while, they'd just see it and be like, oh, okay, there you go.
And didn't you have a really
what?
Weird hat,
yeah.
like a Mexican hat or something that we put on?
Why don't I know about this?
That happened the last day. It was
it
the
was,
last
oh,
day of
Oh, that
filming.
Was the day that we were trying.
All sad.
Just
yeah.
to drag it out.
Desperately.
Yeah. Which I'm very good at helping drag
Oh,
things
my
out.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I just remember, Ashley never gets mad. Ever. She never gets frustrated. She never gets mad.
That
she's
you guys
very
see.
Patient. Yeah, well, you know, when working, she's a very, very patient person, but they were dragging out the scene because they didn't want it to end.
Right.
Understandably so. I didn't want it to end either.
Right.
I did, but I didn't.
Right.
Because I really like all these people, and they kept goofing off, and I was like, guys, Ashley's in the other room. She's going to come in here, guys. Guys. And nobody would listen. Ben
no.
wouldn't listen. Tyler wouldn't listen. Nils
no.
wouldn't listen.
Just a group of non-listeners.
No. And they did it one more time. And then Ashley's cow eyes came in there.
My mad cow eyes.
Yes. She's like, listen!
I used the finger, which is my forefinger. It's the first finger. And that's when, you know, I mean business. I came in there and I remember standing in the doorway and saying, listen to me! You get it right this time! And I pointed my finger and they were all like, oh my God! So they got it right the next time.
And then she walked away, and they all looked at me. I said, I told you guys.
I tried to warn you.
I told you, and you didn't listen.
You don't want her to point at you.
No. Because usually I'm the bad guy on the
yeah.
set. We have good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, yeah. But it means so much more when I become the bad cop.
Oh, it really does.
When the good cop turns ugly, you're like, oh, no.
Over.
It's over. Well, okay. I'm going to tell my favorite story from the sanctuary, and if you hate it, I can take it out.
Oh, I was leading up to it, and I was hoping somebody would go there.
When you are holding the thing up that's blocking the sun, and this is what made Tim fall in love with you and make you you're his favorite person ever.
Yes.
But it was hot in here, guys. It was hot. So we were all sweating profusely, and Ben had sweat under his arms, and he looked at all of us, and he's like, I can't even remember how you put it, but you said, I don't know why my shirt has changed colors all over me, and it stayed the right color under my arm, or something like that.
Gotta return it.
Yeah, we all just started dying laughing. And
Don't look at me.
Yeah, yeah, don't look at me.
Sink's a goner.
But that's when Tim was like, Ben is the funniest guy that ever lived.
And he loves Ben.
Yeah.
Definitely behind the scenes was the best, just because you got to like mess with the other actors in between, and it made it more of a challenge for them probably. But for all the behind the scenes people, it was definitely that was a fun crew to cast to be around.
Absolutely.
I think so. Okay, well, before we move on to talking about Ben's involvement in our second film, let's take a really quick break. Are you looking for a movie that has everything? Action, adventure, comedy, drama, and romance?
Wait, No Lost Cause isn't an action movie.
There's basketball.
That hardly qualifies.
There's verbal sparring.
That's stretching it.
There's Ben Fabish.
Well, I'm sold.
I thought you might be. Tell everybody where they can find their favorite Ben Fabish movie.
I thought you'd never ask. No Lost Cause is available online at www.nolostcausedvd.com or amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, or in person at Family Christian Bookstore or Lifeway Christian Bookstore.
Ashley, Ben's not even the lead in No Lost Cause.
Shh, don't tell Ben that. He hasn't figured it out yet.
Wait, guys?
Welcome back. I just want to briefly touch on your character from the Hepburn Girls. The film isn't released yet, so we won't go into really great detail, but in this film, we use Ben's improv ability to our advantage. I wrote a character specifically for him. I sketched out the kind of person I wanted him to be and the way I wanted him to look. Then I gave him some very bare-bones lines here and there. Then I just told him to throw that all in his blender and create his persona. And the hippie philosopher Ricky was born. Ben, do you have a favorite scene or line as Ricky that you're looking forward to the audiences seeing?
The thing I like about Ricky the best is that he lives his life, I think, just from me making up. But he lives his life. And he kind of has what he thinks and what he feels and believes or whatever, but like that is always repressed by what other people think, require, or ask of him.
Yeah.
And he never really gets to say or do those things ever. Except like on the very end of a sentence. Like he'll sort of tag on to the very end of the sentence.
Passive aggressive.
Yeah, like there's a couple of scenes where like I'm getting asked questions or having conversations with Rachel's character, Penny, in the movie, who's my girlfriend in the movie, and we're having a conversation back and forth, and she's dominating it very
yes.
much so, and I'm sort of trying to answer, but she's like correcting me and kind of shaping how it's supposed to go, and then like usually like at the end of the cut is where I finally get to like sneak in my little, what I actually feel or what I actually
your
say.
Your little quip at the yeah. end of it.
I'm in prison right now. It's yeah. one of my favorites. In prison.
Yeah, that was like one of the best ones. Or like
it's always under his breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like where he's actually talking is always yeah. just under his breath. What's coming out in your hearing is just sort of him, you know, complying with everyone else. But the parts that he gets to say like at the end and under his breath, that's the true Ricky inside.
Well, how would you say that Ricky and Scott are different? Because they are very different.
It's very.
Number one, in the looks.
Yeah.
Because you committed
Definitely.
To being
Absolutely.
Ricky.
Definitely.
I told him I wanted him to have long hair. I wanted him to grow as much of a beard
Which
as
is
he
difficult.
Could.
Because of my Native American heritage, it's
yes.
very difficult for me.
Yes.
For, it's slow. It just comes very slowly. And
you have been growing it for like 8 months.
It was forever. And I actually warned my mother before it happened because I'm usually pretty much clean shaven. And I told her, I was like, Mom, I'm going to grow my hair out and I'm going to not shave for a while. So I'm just warning you. But it's for a good cause. To just
I promise.
Let you know.
Yeah.
And then as we were shooting and stuff and as it was drawing, the end was drawing nigh, she kept asking for like the countdown of when's your movie over? When are you going to look human again? But no, definitely. I remember coming up to you guys and we were discussing the character and I was like, you said something like hippie and stuff. And I was like, well, I think I just want to like, see how much real facial hair I can get. And
yeah.
if it doesn't work, we just need to like glue some on because I really think he needs some.
That would work for the character.
Yeah,
well.
I remember he asked me every month, he would ask me, is my hair long enough yet? Should I cut it? Nope, keep it going.
Keep it going.
It was epic for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely like in the outward confidence shown, Ricky is not like outwardly confident at all. Except maybe when he's performing his music, he's a little bit more in the zone. He's kind of like in his
I thing. Guess Scott and Ricky are similar in that yeah. Scott thought he was a fantastic basketball player, and Ricky thinks he is a fantastic musician. But it's funny, you guys are really good at it. But it's a humor. It's mm-hmm. it's such a funny song, and you
Definitely.
Don't sing it badly, but it's just so. The lyrics.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, Definitely. It's so bad yeah. that it's good. And I think
or
people,
it's so good that it's bad.
Whichever way you want to look at it. But people just listen to it and they're like, really? Really? And then they're singing it later because it's just mm-hmm. that funny.
Absolutely it is.
Well, we talked about you and Rachel getting to act together in several scenes. Can you give the listeners a little teaser of your character's relationship? And do you two have a favorite scene that you did together?
Well,
so remember, nobody knows anything about the Hepburn Girls
right,
yet.
Right, right. Well,
I die in the end.
Not true.
Not true. Penny is a very overbearing, dominant personality, like Ben was saying.
She's a fiery redhead.
She's a fiery redhead. And what do you know? I was a redhead for mm-hmm. it, too. So she plays the protagonist, Catherine's best friend, or the best friend that she has, I guess
yeah.
you could say.
Penny thinks she's Catherine's best friend, or she calls yeah. herself Catherine's best friend.
Right, right. So she's in a relationship with Ricky, who is Ben, the hippie philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, their relationship, it's just pretty much she's the boss, and he does what she says.
Yeah, even being her boyfriend, he said, well, okay.
I had nothing better.
It was just easier than
fighting with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was easier. It's easier to just submit to the oppression.
I think they are, but watching the film, they're a completely toxic couple that you really hope work out because they're so funny and you realize they are so bad for each other, but they're so good for comedy.
Yeah.
But they're perfect for each other.
They really
at the same
are
time.
Perfect.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite parts, it wasn't on screen, I guess it kind of was, but like there's one scene or the day that we were filming. There was like a driving lesson going on in the movie, and we were filming that on that day, and me and Rachel were in a car and kept driving and doing takes, and we kept pulling back to the beginning of the driveway and pulling down to the end of it, pulling to the end of it,
right,
and we kept doing that over and over again, and in the car, and that's kind of how we did a lot of the characters, because like you said, it was improv'd a lot,
mm-hmm.
But there wasn't any backstory written for my character at all, because it was kind of a small-ish part.
It was written small, but I knew that you would make it bigger.
Exactly.
Like I said, I just gave you bare-bones lines, and I was like, hey, you're in the scene, do what you want in the scene, because I know that your improv lines would be better than anything that I could write.
Yeah, like there wasn't anything like to kind of go from necessarily other than like the lines that I had.
Right.
So me and Rachel, like while driving back and forth, like decided what our like backstory was.
Yes.
And like it like completely wrote that like improv that I had, because we made up how we met and like how our relationship was working and like how we both felt about it and like, you know,
well,
where.
Well, tell them just a little bit. Don't give away too much of it, but tell them, how did you guys meet? How did Penny and Ricky meet in the film?
There's a farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
There's a farmer's market.
There's a farmer's market. And Ricky was selling carrots at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Orange ones. And there's also some cosmic carrots for anyone that knows what that is. It's legit. It's nothing. It's legit. They're purple on the inside and spirally. Check it out.
What?
Google it. I'm not kidding. I worked at a farmer's market in real life.
Okay. I've never heard of cosmic carrots.
Change
is it genetically like
I don't know how it
superior?
Happens. I cut it open and there it was.
So that's what you were selling. Those are the carrots that you were missing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Google this.
You should. Well, anyway,
I'm not wrong. I'm
Penny,
Googling it right now.
So Penny goes to the farmer's market and she sees this man.
And she says, he'll do.
And she said, well, he'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she goes up to him and says, hey, have you had any lunch? He's like, no. Well, would you like to go have dinner with me? Yeah, sure. You know, he's sitting there thinking, oh, it's a free ticket. Yeah, free meal. Whatever.
I'm hungry.
I don't care.
Which, that's how I live. Survive.
And the next thing you know is Penny's going around telling everybody that we went on a date and he's my boyfriend.
So he just went with it.
Yeah. He did. He kind of
okay, they're
it.
Not spirally in the middle, but they are purple.
He's Googling
He's
right now.
He's Googling it at the same time.
He's going to show us a picture.
Legit.
Oh, my goodness.
Boom. Farmer's market knowledge.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so they're purple on the outside,
mm-hmm.
and
they
they're
do have,
orange
like,
on the inside.
Weirdness inside. But
look at that. Does it taste
oh, wow.
good? Have you ever
it's the
had
same
one?
Thing, yeah.
It's the exact same carrot.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it's
a purple people eater carrot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks like a
Little
beet.
Did you know this was going to be in the interview.
Yeah, I know.
I bring a little knowledge with me.
You do.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I've never heard of that.
I was really glad that that was what they were actually called.
Cosmic carrots. Because we're sitting here looking at you like, what does
You're
he mean
crazy.
By cosmic carrots?
Well, tell us a little bit about the songs that you wrote together. Talk about improv.
Oh, goodness.
Penny and Ricky performed two songs. Their band, Eagle's Wings.
See, I didn't know that was the name of the band. I saw that the other day when we
Have we signed
Hannah.
Off on that?
I haven't signed
you
off
You did.
On, okay.
I haven't signed off on anything
I have,
yet.
No,
was
I have.
Hannah's idea?
I have proof in an email that you remember that when we were talking about we're going to do that tweeting thing, and I said, I need to know what your band's called, and you decided what my tweet handle would be, and I decided what your band would be, and you're like, okay, we're
so
even.
We traded that?
We Wait, traded that, yes.
When was he in charge of the band name, first of all?
You were in the email. You could have said something.
You don't understand. I have blacked out like the entire email process. I don't remember emails that
No,
were
he
sent
decided
to me this
on
morning.
My alter ego Kate's
it was an awesome
cats
handle.
For Kate. So that's going to be my Twitter eventually. And then okay. I said, okay, let's call you Eagles Wings. He's like, yeah, that's awesome.
It's it on sounds
there.
Right.
I have proof. I have black and white lettered
you're
proof.
You're going to have to print that out and show it to me in documentation because I never signed off to anything.
Well,
I mean, it's a good name. We'll go with it for now.
I literally signed nothing.
We'll go with it for now.
Well, why don't you talk about your song that you wrote?
Well, we wrote two songs.
Yes.
And they weren't really written down anywhere.
No, I don't think they were. Well, no. If they were, they're no longer.
Right. Well, the first one that we came up with, and I can't say the name of it. I almost did.
Don't, yeah.
I can't say the name of it because it's a big plot. Yeah, you want to, don't you? You want to say it.
Yes.
I can't say the name of it, but we're filming a scene in Duke's house, which mm-hmm. you'll figure out who Duke is if you see the Hepburn Girls. And we're filming a scene, and I said, Ben, we've got to do this. We've got to work on a song because the scene's tomorrow, and we have nothing.
Yeah.
We had nothing. So we went outside, and we sat on the porch, and then we went back inside, and we were just, you know, trying to figure out the right thing, and it just kind of came to us, right?
Yeah. I think that's kind of how both songs went, really. We just kind of were... I think we did them both on set, not necessarily the day of.
You wrote the coffee shop song at the gas station the day before, and you wrote the other song the day before.
Which that's the best way to do things, really. I mean, what's with all this
planning ahead? It seems to be the way we work. Yeah, that's how
we've talked about that. We are very organic filmmakers over here. We just tend to, hey, let's just wing it. Eagles wings it.
TM.
Makes me feel very uncomfortable because I was like there for a week. I was like, we've got to fix this song. We've got to do this song. The day before we started writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it comes together. You just gotta
it came
go
together.
With it, you know?
I think it's funny.
It's quite horrific.
It is.
It's funny.
Do you agree then? You agree?
It is fairly horrific. And as like a musician, we recorded the song and everything, but the audio wasn't great. So we went back and recorded it again later.
Right.
And there's definitely a part in it where watching it, I'm just watching me play guitar the whole time, and I'm watching, listening to what we recorded.
Yeah.
And I failed.
Oh.
No, you didn't. You did
fine. At the very end of it. Anyone watch it and you'll see.
No, don't.
It's on.
Don't tell them where.
No, don't say the name of
Duke's
the song.
House. At Duke's
there
house.
You go. It's at Duke's house.
Pay attention.
I know the part that you're talking about, but that was incredibly difficult.
There's a ghost strum.
That's
a ghost
right.
strum.
That's all right.
If we can get rid of it in sound design, you
it's
know,
okay.
We'll try to figure something out.
No, it needs to be there for my shame.
You need to learn your lesson.
You have to learn your lesson.
I'll do better next time, I promise. Not better at everything.
That's the thing that we always talk about is learning your lesson.
Yeah, we do.
Bearing your shame.
Yeah,
owning it.
Yeah, we do.
I do.
We punish ourselves.
We do. You know, if I say, I have to go to the bathroom. Well, go to the bathroom. No, I can't.
I have to learn my lesson. I should have gone before I got here.
Code of shame.
We went to the Creation Museum in Cincinnati, and my pants were entirely too big for me.
Yeah.
And...
She forgot a belt.
I forgot a belt.
But she had a belt in the car. And I said, go get your belt. No, I have to learn my lesson.
So I'd walk around pulling up my pants the entire time.
Yep. And you also wore flip-flops instead of tennis shoes. And you said, no, I have to bear this. I have to learn my lesson.
And so what we all want to know.
Yes.
Did you wear a belt today?
No, actually, these pants fit. I did learn my lesson when I bought new pants.
Always wear a belt.
You're wearing
and that's why we always wear a belt.
Always leave a note.
Arrested Development, lesson. Ladies and gentlemen.
We'll get to that later.
Yes. Well, since we just talked about songs, Ben, you've been playing guitar for quite a long time. Do you want to tell us how you got your start in music?
My family, it's kind of odd because my parents are, and this isn't really calling them out or not, but they're not very musical. Like, they don't play instruments really. My dad actually has kind of been learning guitar recently, but neither one of them are really musical, but they both... we're very strong on like getting us like into lessons and everything, mm-hmm. and so like all of my older siblings were like in piano lessons, and everybody had to learn piano before they could try anything else, and it was very like that's it and that's no other. Mm-hmm. But and then when it got to me, that really didn't happen. But because of that like kind of environment of everybody like playing
something,
I really wanted to play guitar, so like I didn't really take piano lessons too seriously, which is unfortunate. But anyways. That's kind of how I started. I just was finally a guitar kind of became available at our house, and so like as soon as it did, I was like, you know, show me some chords, just show me something. Mm-hmm. And so my older brother Jake sat me down and showed me like I think it was E minor and D, and he was just like, all right, maybe you need to practice just changing from those two chords, and just practice that, and then once you can do that without looking at it, then you just need to practice strumming, and then it just kind of really kind of spiraled out from there. I never really got any lessons other than like, and then I would kind of ask him sometimes for new chords, And then as time's gone on, I've kind of looked up chords, other chords if I needed to. But then
how old were you when you started this?
That's a great question for my foggy memory. I would say probably 15 or 16.
Okay. Okay.
So you've been doing it for...
Yeah, and being 42, wow. It's been a little while. but yeah, no.
You're great for your age.
You do. Know?
Thank you. Thank you. I've actually been asked if I was 14 years old before, but
not recently. Were you 14? Oh, no, it was recent.
It was like a year or two ago. Let's not talk about it. But no, and we went to a church where my dad was a pastor, and so my older siblings were kind of the praise team, and kind of as time went on and some of them moved on, you know, I got to kind of join in with the praise team. I got to play with them. And then obviously, since my family, you know, was kind of had that musical environment, we'd play whenever we could, just sit around and
so how many siblings do you have?
Counting me, there's 10 kids. There's 7 male children, and there are 3 females in the children functions. There's also 2 parents.
One of each.
That was the most awkward way of wording that.
I am number.
Children function.
I'm number 5 from the top, and I'm number. I don't know what that would do from the bottom. That's too hard.
I'm assuming it would be 4, right?
There's
or 5.
Ten, there's 10 of us.
So 10.
That would be 6 from the bottom.
6 from the bottom.
So I share the middle, but I am very much a middle child.
Okay.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yes.
Yes.
You have the middle child syndrome.
Yes.
He looks for approval.
Yes. Yes.
Question mark. Do I?
Is that good? I can change it. I really can.
Do you want me to
take
have
a picture of me and put it in the family photo album? I just want to be noticed.
Yes.
Actually, if you want to go into more, you know, therapy about this.
Sure.
In our family, there was the parents. They, since there's so many of us, you know, you have to kind of come up with some sort of numbering or unit system to kind of be able to, you know, marshal the troops around.
Right.
And so the 4 eldest children in our family were referred to as the 4 older kids. And when I was a kid, I always kind of thought like, oh, okay, they're the 4 older kids. That makes sense. Yeah, they're the oldest. But maybe there'll be like a time where I hit a certain age and then there'll be the 5 older kids. And as time rolled on, that never really happened. So I figured, well, maybe that's not a time thing. Maybe they only can allow 4 in that group. And so I was like, but as soon as like the oldest one moves out or gets married or whatever, I am in. And that didn't happen. When the 4th oldest one moved out, they were still like part of the 4 older kids. But I was.
Did you have a name for your middle group?
The rest of you. The younger kids. I don't know. We had a gang.
The others.
Yeah. But we were very much, it was probably good for my parents because the 4 older kids kind of were part of the law at our house. And, you know, they were kind of like, you know, the 4 older kids would stay.
Were they all boys or was there any girls?
No, they're even. It was 2 and 2.
Oh, okay.
But the, yeah, it was that was part of just wanting to be part of the 4 older kids. That's something.
The rest of you.
Yeah.
He still aspires.
Yeah, he does.
Looking
to be
out
part
into
of
this. I will one day make it in, I promise. That's not going to happen.
So, yeah. Well, do you have any songs released? Backpedaling,
yeah,
way far.
Just a little bit.
Defined released? I don't know.
Are they on YouTube?
There's some like covers of songs I did on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Me and my younger brother Jesse put out kind of like a CD, but we did it like just, you know, by ourselves. It's
right.
Not very well recorded or anything. We put it on. I think it's on Facebook or something, but.
Well, we're trying to promote you, so
yeah.
If people want to listen to you or learn more about you, where could they go or what could they look up?
If you go, now I should maybe check this on my phone, but if you go on Facebook, it was years ago, if you go on Facebook.
Do you want them to see these?
Maybe not. no, the band name that we kind of came up with, and there's no reason for it, but Brown Tree.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, yeah, we wrote and recorded some songs on there, and then me and my younger brother, George, kind of got together and just messed around with some covers of songs where you kind of did that and put it.
Well, what's your YouTube username or screen name so people can look up your stuff?
I think
you don't know what it is either?
No.
We are the worst self-promoters ever.
Yeah.
I know.
Don't find it. It's not good. It could be better. I'm just, what is it? I'm learning from my shame or something.
No. I'm going to talk about George, his brother, his younger brother that he mentioned. He is in the second film as one of Catherine's very, very bad dates, and he does an excellent job.
He
He's
does.
Very funny.
Can you say all the names of the members of your family extremely fast?
Oh, yeah. Rachel, Josh, Liz, Jake, Ben, Abby, Jesse, George, Dan, Mike.
Good job.
Yeah, you only had to, like, pause once.
Did you figure out the name of the band?
No. It's okay.
It's actually in my car. I have it on the iPod.
That's all right. Just okay. Google Ben's name, see what happens.
See what happens. You never know.
You never know. Ben
if Fish. You find something, maybe don't tell other people about it.
Maybe not. Just listen to it. If you like it, spread the word. If you don't, just keep it to yourself.
I'll learn from the shame. I really will. Every day.
Put your shame cone on.
Yeah.
Okay, well, do you have a particular musician whose sound you aspire to or favor?
Definitely. I feel that if you're going to be a singer, that you should sing your own music. And there's great singers like Frank Sinatra and other people that perform that.
Right.
But I really admire the people that write and sing.
Singer-songwriter.
Right. Because they're not really performing it as much as, like, actually, you know...
They're investing in it.
Right. Know? They're sharing, like, their experience with you.
Yeah.
And probably my favorite, and he's been in so many different kind of bands and things, so I could kind of give you the whole breakdown of it, but Glenn Hansard is probably my favorite musician,
mm-hmm.
and that's really hard for me to say because I have so many different ones I like, but he was actually, it's a funny story, he's got a great life story, he was in school, and he hated it, and wasn't doing well, and was getting bad grades, and he was kind of busking, which is that's what they call a street musician. He's from Ireland.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that's what he was doing with his friends at the time. And he really, really loved that. And I guess his principal knew that. And so his principal called him in the office and said, this school thing's really not working out for you. You should take some time off. Apparently they do things differently in Ireland. You should take some time off, and I might be quoting this slightly wrong, but you should take this time off and go out and really pursue that the singing that you really love to do and really pursue that and come back, and I forget what the length of time was, 6 months or something, and if you still love it and you still whatever, that's what you need to do, and that's what you need to do with your life, and you shouldn't be in here wasting your time, mm-hmm. Causing
getting
problems,
an education.
Doing whatever. And that's kind of how he started, and him and his friends from the age of about 13, I don't know what his friends' ages were, but they just kind of would go out on the street and perform and kind of build up from there. And their band was called The Frames. And they eventually became very popular in Ireland and kind of like in obscurity in most other places. And then him and he had one of the band members kind of move on from being in the band to starting making films.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a movie called Once, which is a great movie.
Oh, no. Okay, there's the name.
Yeah. And is he
the lead guy in Once? Okay,
His friend, who was in the band before, came up to him and said, hey, I'm making this movie. You've been a street musician all your life. I kind of wanted to pick your brain on stuff. And it kind of morphed from picking his brain into you should really play this part.
Wow.
And kind of previous to that conversation, Glenn had been in Czechoslovakia, and he had met this girl and her family, and her name was Marketa Glova, and she played the piano. She was kind of like a classical musician, mm-hmm. and he'd gotten to know the family, kind of lived at their house for a while, and they played together and wrote some music together and different things, and they hadn't found a girl yet for the part, and his friend was asking Glenn Hansard, he was like, hey, do you know of anybody that can play, and that would want to... And he said, well, Marketa Glova, she's really good, and she hasn't had any previous experience, and neither had Glenn Hansard. They've never been in any, they were just musicians. But anyway, so she got the part as well, and they both, they were both in the part, and they wrote songs for the movie, and they did all the music for it.
Yeah, they won the Oscar for Falling Slowly,
and they won the Oscar for one of their songs in the movie, Falling Slowly. It was kind of funny how they actually got to that because they were showing the movie in little independent film festivals and stuff,
right.
And they submitted it to Sundance, and they couldn't get it approved. It got sent back, sorry, we can't take you. And they were showing it in one of the film festivals in Ireland, and a guy that happened to be involved somehow with Sundance was over there, and he watched it there, and he's like, this is really amazing. Why, you should put this in Sundance. We tried, it didn't work. And so he's like, well... let me go see or something. And so anyway, he ended up getting it admitted into Sundance, and because of that, it won awards there.
It was Oscar worthy.
Everywhere.
Yeah, stuff.
And then eventually went on to win best song.
I saw it years and years and years ago.
And him and Glenn and Marketa actually formed another band called Swell Season, and they're amazing as well. Also Damien Rice, who's also Irish.
Oh, yes.
I'm a fan of Irish musicians.
You are, yeah. I remember.
There's more. Lisa Hannigan, I could go on, but.
Anybody that's not from here, Mumford?
Mumford,
I know you love
good.
Mumford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of your hobbies. We talked very briefly about how you helped us out as one of the special effects makeup artists for Beth Ann, but you actually enjoy doing artwork of your own. Can you tell us what kind of art you enjoy the most?
Do you mean like doing or seeing?
Both.
Doing and seeing. I like a lot of different kinds of art. I'm a big fan of like Impressionism.
Mm-hmm. Monet.
Monet's. Mm-hmm. Monet's amazing. I really like the like Norman Rockwell, which some people don't consider him an artist, but he is an artist.
He is an artist. Absolutely, he's an artist.
For everyone out there that would say differently. And like Tom Hooper, I'm a big fan of that guy. He did like the Nighthawks painting with the two people like in the ice cream sundae.
Tom Hooper?
I think it's Tom Hooper.
No, that's the director.
Nope, that would be the director. Does Olivia know? She was an art person.
Oh, well, maybe you're right.
I was pretty sure that was it, but Nighthawks is the name of the painting.
That's incredible that you like two Tom Hoopers.
Yeah.
Nighthawks is the name of the painting, so that I know for sure. And different things like that. I'm not nearly as talented as the people I just named, but I do like doing art when I can.
Do you like landscape or portrait?
Both, actually. Mm-hmm. I like working more from like a photo. I've never really worked as much from like with any people.
Right.
That just,
you've never had anyone set for you.
Right. That in my mind, that just seems really awkward.
It does. And having to stay still.
Like if I'm just like sitting here staring at you.
Yeah,
like, okay,
I'd have to look away.
Then your
I'd
eye.
I'd have to be one of those where I
Great, you moved your eye.
Sorry.
Great. So I've only worked with photos and stuff. I've worked with like
have you
still
ever,
lives.
Have you ever drawn anything from your imagination? No photos?
Not very often. I'll do like cartoon stuff.
Right, yeah.
From that more so. I've done some things like that, but it hasn't ever really worked out as well as I've wanted it to, like mm-hmm. as I've seen it in my mind. Mm-hmm. Whenever that happens, then maybe I'll be, you know, getting paid for it or something.
But maybe.
Unfortunately, I haven't like done very much art recently
right.
just because of life and work.
Yes. So let's talk about Norman Rockwell some more because I like him.
Okay.
Why do you think that people don't think that he's an artist? They call him an illustrator, right?
Yeah. And I want to be an illustrator someday if that ever happens. So, I mean, if he's an illustrator, that's what I want to be, too. I don't know why they don't think that he's an artist, just because his work is so amazing. It, like, makes you feel what,
it,
you know. Like,
it is one of the, he's one of the rare artists that actually, you're right, makes me feel an emotion. He makes it, like, it swells. Emotion
right.
swells
every,
within
every
me.
Every scene is just moving. There's,
yes, and so detailed.
Yeah, and everything has such great texture, and the colors
yes.
just have the right temperature.
It like, almost looks like a photograph.
Yeah, but it's like this, it's like he took a photograph, and he actually made it a little bit more, like, romanticized
yeah,
somehow.
Yeah,
and, like, that ability alone is just amazing. Yeah.
You can definitely tell a difference from his 1920s work versus his 50s and
mm-hmm.
60s. I
mm-hmm.
actually like the 50s and 60s
yeah.
stuff better. Because the 1920s stuff, they're very round-faced, mm-hmm. and it looks more cartoonish.
Mm-hmm.
But the 50s and 60s,
yeah.
the Saturday Evening Post covers
yeah.
from those times look
real. I think
real.
He kind of found his voice. Kind
yeah.
of,
yeah.
I don't know if you can say that in art, but he kind of found his voice.
Sure.
Somewhat, and like when he started out, he was very much more like his work kind of resembled like fine art and like more like classic interpretations of art and stuff. And then he
yeah.
kind of moved into like his own style. And there's several, like, I'm a big fan, and this might be embarrassing since I'm 25, not 42, but I'm a big fan of kids' books and
uh-huh.
a huge fan of book illustrations.
Oh, yeah, yeah, those can make or break a book.
Definitely, and that'd be something I'd love to do someday, possibly, but. There's several artists like Robert McCloskey, Make Way for Ducklings, for anyone that
mm-hmm.
knows that. High five to you. But he just does amazing work as well, and Homer Price.
Do you have a particular favorite Norman Rockwell painting? Or a particular favorite painting of the Impressionists? Or do you have, like, you said Nighthawks was one of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have other favorites?
I went to the St. Louis Art Museum a couple times, and they had the Water Lilies there by Monet.
Yeah, those are pretty.
It was just, I mean, because you see art in books and online or whatever, just,
right.
you know, pictures of it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But, like, when I got there and, like, saw, like, their giant panels, like, the panels are, like, actually huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you get to see, like, brush strokes and,
yeah.
like, all that. And that was just amazing. And I was, like, it's funny because I was there with, and, like, you can, if you go to an art museum, like, it's best to go there with a lot of, like, people that appreciate art.
Right.
And, like, sometimes you'll go there with, like, friends and stuff, and they're kind of like, oh, that's cool, moving on.
Yeah.
And, like, I was just, like, sitting there, like, just, like, staring at that. And then he, like, added, like, a little goop there.
Yeah.
And did this here.
Some
and,
happy
like,
clouds.
Yes.
Happy clouds. Bob Ross.
Yes, those happy clouds.
Let's have a moment for Bob Ross.
That was a good moment.
That was a good moment.
Okay, at the J.B. Speed Art Museum, have you seen the Lincoln? The cast of Lincoln's face? That is amazing. It's supposedly an actual cast of Abraham Lincoln's face, so it's supposed to be the actual, that's what he looked like.
Huh.
Did they do it when he died?
No, he sat for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they cast.
He's going to be like, that's morbid.
No,
He didn't lay for it.
Thanks, Rachel.
Way to end it.
Bring us down.
Yeah.
Rachel's favorite artist happens to be Monet and Thomas Kinkade.
Very good, Rachel.
Thomas Kinkade.
Why are you giving her...
We can edit this, but I don't like Thomas Kinkade.
You don't have to like him. He's dead, so it's okay.
He is dead.
But why don't you like him? And why do you always say to edit what you say?
Because, I mean, this doesn't... tons of people... Everyone loves Thomas Kincaid.
Not everyone loves Thomas Kincaid. A lot of people hate him.
Why do they hate him? Why do you hate him? Let's not say hate.
I'm not hating him.
Hate is a strong word.
He's a good man. I don't like him for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's the painter of light.
Yeah.
That's just... I mean, he probably didn't come up with the title himself.
I don't think he would call himself.
Sure, I hope not.
I'm not the filmmaker of light, so I mean, you
but
know.
But like everything's tagged with that. But every painter and almost every artist, in a way, is like painting light because everything, you know, it's just kind of, he does a really good job demonstrating the light.
So perhaps what you dislike is his tagline.
But I also dislike kind of his art as well, just because it's really good. But it almost always feels like you'd buy it at Walmart or you'd buy it at...
It's because you can buy it at Walmart.
You can.
You can make... They sell puzzles of Thomas Kincaid.
You can, but so they make puzzles of other people too. But like yeah. It just doesn't... It just kind of feels processed. It's like too good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. I was always like...
He's really good though.
I've always heard that his paintings were inspired by heaven. You know, uh-huh. This is what he imagines heaven
to look
like. And
like I said, he's a really good guy as
right.
well. So, I mean, like, I don't hate him by any means. But.
Even the latter years of his life, though, are quite debatable if he was a good guy or not. But
I don't know.
We're in no place to judge him at all. But, you know, he was caught in some fishy, scandalous situations. But no place to judge him because
everybody
does something scandalous.
At least once.
I don't know. I just said, I actually based a screenplay off of one of his paintings.
Yeah, you did. It was a really good screenplay, too.
Yeah.
So. You can edit this out. I like Thomas Kincaid. You're full of it.
It's okay.
Smiling.
But
my favorite.
Like Monet. I do like Monet, and I like.
There's numerous others. I just pulled him out because, like I said,
Van Gogh. Do you like Van Gogh? I do like
Van Gogh. He's kind of crazy, but his textures are.
I don't like Picasso as much.
No,
I'm not a big Picasso person.
I'm not.
Although,
if
there's any, I don't know where you would look it up, but he actually is an amazing artist.
Picasso?
Yeah, like
his abstract?
I understand what he did, and it's kind of cool what he did, but I just. In the end, I still don't really like it.
Yeah.
But like, he's actually really good at like just regular art. Like, he's really. I saw one time I was in an art class, and this teacher showed it to us, and it was like really lifelike, and it was amazing.
Wow.
Like, I've always thought he always looked like. I mean, obviously he's.
Now I have seen some of his regular. I have not. Like,
so
not
he did the abstract as a way to sort of separate himself from the crowd.
Right. Well, I mean, he was trying to say something with all of his paintings. I just didn't really. I guess in the end. Looking at it, I just either didn't get it, or I just didn't like what he said, or...
Right.
What?
I'm going to plug my mom and say she's one of my favorite artists. She's really, really good.
She's really good, but you're sucking up.
No, aww. I'm not. I'm just kidding. Honestly not.
Actually, she is a fantastic artist, and we used a bunch of her artwork mm-hmm. for the Hepburn Girls. We should have done it for No Lost Cause, but...
We didn't know not
we
to.
We didn't know... That those are the rules.
Right,
but,
right. But yeah, I think the amazing. Mark of a great artist is that you could look at one of their paintings and tell who the artist is without having to look. Like, if you see a Norman Rockwell painting... You know it's Norman Rockwell. If you see a Monet, you're like, you could narrow it down, but you're pretty sure it's a Monet. And Picasso, I mean, even if we like or don't like, you can tell it's Picasso. And when I see my... if I see my mom's paintings out in a gallery or something, I can always point hers out.
She has a very impressionistic style to hers as well.
Yeah, but she's got very vibrant colors. She loves the bold, bright colors, and I think her landscapes are just beautiful. I've always loved them.
Yeah, I love the one that I think it's of you and Lauren. Is it you and your cousin Lauren?
No, Lindsay.
Lindsay. Okay, mm-hmm. It's your cousin Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I love that paint. That she did such a good job with that. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Rebecca Raymer.
Well, we're going to get back to what we were discussing prior to.
Acting.
Mm-hmm. You knew the topic was coming.
Dun, dun, dun.
Audrey Hepburn.
Yes. Ben's
Yay.
Favorite actress, without a doubt, is Miss Audrey Hepburn. Can you tell us how she became your favorite actress?
I'm trying to think what the first movie I saw her in. I've always kind of liked her, like even before, just because I thought she was pretty and kind of had class and everything. And then I saw, I'm trying to think what the first one that I saw was. I want to say it was Roman Holiday.
Ah.
And I might have seen Sabrina before, but I didn't remember that well. But I saw Roman Holiday, and it was just amazing. I really like, some actors really just have a lot of honesty about them.
Yeah.
And some actors, like, they kind of have, like, a little bit of, like, sleaze or, like, kind of, like, it's comes off funny. But, like, her acting, I just love it. It's just very honest.
She's the epitome of class.
Yeah.
Her and Grace Kelly, I would say.
Yeah.
And then, like, as time went on and I, you know, watched more of her movies and stuff and learned about her life, like, just the pedestal that she went on to kind of went higher and higher just with like her work with, you know, in Africa and everything.
Right, right. You know, I was one of those like you. I sort of knew of her, but I didn't really, I kind of wanted to be cool and trendy and not like who was popular. So I was like, oh, Audrey Hepburn, she's okay. But then I had never really seen any of her films. I was just saying that. And when I was a teenager, I saw her in Charade with Cary Grant. And after that, I was on board, 100% Audrey Hepburn fan. Mm-hmm. It was just phenomenal. And then I saw How to Steal a Million, Roman Holiday, and Sabrina, and all these films. I was like, this woman is wonderful. She was just, no matter what she was doing on screen, you just wanted to watch her. You wanted to see how, okay, when Audrey's happy, how does she look? When Audrey's sad, how does she look, you know?
Yeah, and like when...
Beautiful, both ways.
And when she goes for like an emotion, it like just seems genuine, like in the 100%. It's not like, it doesn't seem like she's shooting for what she thinks the emotion is supposed to be. She just like,
she's feeling
it. She just gets to that emotion.
Did she win an Academy Award?
She did.
For Roman Holiday.
Roman Holiday, right. That was her first film.
Yeah, Gregory Peck insisted that her name be above the title because he was the big star at the time and she was new. He said, no, this girl is going to be somebody.
Well, good. Good for him.
Yeah. He's a good guy. He went on to be her friend in real life.
Yeah, I like that.
Did you say what your favorite movie of hers was?
That's a hard one. It is. I've thought about that. And it's actually, I think, it might be like one of my favorite movies of all time up there. And that's always a hard list for me to whittle down on. Just Roman Holiday. Her and Gregory Peck together in that movie, like, you could tell that, like, they were becoming friends in
as
real
they were
life
filming it,
and on set and, like, in the movie.
Yeah.
Everything just synced together so well, and like you couldn't really tell. I think there was some age difference there.
Oh yeah.
But it didn't. You really just didn't feel it because there was such great chemistry on there, and her performance was just.
What did you think about Breakfast at Tiffany's? Because that was sort of a departure from her normal style.
Yeah. I liked it. I don't think it's like my favorite one of her movies at all. And that might be kind of. I'm kind of like you in a way. Like I don't want to like. If somebody's like, well, what's your favorite? I don't want to like go and hit like the one that's at the top of
everybody's list. Yeah.
But I did like it. I
think Charade is probably my favorite of hers, and then How to Steal a Million. Mm-hmm.
That's a fun one.
That is very fun, and Peter O'Toole is just beautiful in that film.
Yeah. Have you seen Wait Until Dark?
I have, yeah. I thought her acting was very good in that one. But
that's probably almost her best, like, acting, because she's kind of always plays, like, a very happy, very good, very...
I think that's the film that made Caitlin want to start acting, but it was for Alan Arkin, right?
She wrote to Alan Arkin.
She wrote to him, and she wrote him a fan letter, and he wrote back and said, I am both encouraged and supremely mortified that you love my character in Wait Until Dark. And
that this was a creepy character.
Yeah, it was very, very creepy. But she carried it around in her wallet. I said, you've got to scan this. Keep the scan in your wallet, but put the other one away.
Yeah.
Rachel, have you seen any of Audrey's films?
Yes, I've seen Audrey's films.
Well, do you have a favorite?
It's either Breakfast at Tiffany's or Roman Holiday.
Yeah,
those are good ones. It's one or the other. I like Sabrina too, but
yeah.
So in Children's Hour as well, if anybody's seen
it. I have not seen that one.
That's a pretty good one.
Is it? With
Shirley MacLaine in it.
Shirley
she does a good job as well. They play really well.
Yeah. I feel awful for asking this, but who was the actor that fell in love with her?
William Holden.
What movie?
Mm-hmm. Sabrina.
Was it Sabrina? Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They also were in Paris When It Sizzles.
That's the one that I was thinking
of.
Yeah. They did that together later. Yeah. It was really awkward filming because he was still in love with her.
Another one
she wasn't feeling it.
I liked her in it, but like I thought the movie was kind of awkward. It was Funny Face.
Yeah. Yeah. With her and Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
Just sometimes you just
need to. Great dancer, but
yeah,
it just was weird.
Don't do that. Don't do that, Fred.
Although it did make it into a Gap commercial later.
Well, do you have any other classic movie actors that you enjoy watching?
I said Gregory Peck. I like him in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he came across like kind of cliche himself, which I don't like when actors do that. But like he always seemed very genuine. There's one actor that's like very, very cliche, but I've always loved him and everything that he was in. It's Fred McMurray. And he played like absent-minded professor and everything.
Did you see The Apartment? He played against type in that one.
I didn't really see that one.
Oh,
yeah. I haven't seen all. I'm not at the level of fandom of him where I've seen all of his movies. Every like as a kid, I just wanted him to
be
my
dad.
Well,
think of him in the
Follow Me, Boys. Anybody?
No. If you've seen Absent-Minded Professor and all that, just think of
Son
the
of
opposite. Think of the opposite. Whatever that would be, and that's who he plays in The Apartment. He's a womanizing. He's a womanizing, really bad guy.
I liked. I mean, it's a long list. I hate doing favorite lists just because then I just start thinking of, no, that one's good too.
Right.
I'm a fan of like a couple of his movies. Like his performances are amazing at Clark Gable.
Yeah.
It Happened One Night is probably up there on the top of my list as well.
Yeah.
And that was, it was the perfect role for him and everything with his very much his weird kind of charm / sleaze / domineering / handsome / whatever else he brought.
I think that George Clooney in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou looks like Clark Gable.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that George Clooney looks like Cary Grant.
Yeah, I could see that too. Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite classic movie actors? I know we've sort of touched on this before.
I'm just going to go ahead and say James Stewart real quick.
Yes. And Cary Grant.
Yeah.
I love Cary Grant too, but James Stewart is just like a special person.
He was very nice in real life too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, fun fact, everyone should do this.
It's like me and boy, isn't it?
I'm just sitting over here. I'm not saying a word.
There's a YouTube video that everyone should go watch, and it's with Jimmy Stewart on, I should really know this guy's name. It's like the original Late Show guy.
Oh, Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson.
Is he reading his poetry?
And he reads a poem called Beau.
I know. I have that tape. I have the tape of his poems.
If you haven't audiobook. Seen it, please go watch it. It will break your heart.
It's wonderful. Amazing. It's wonderful.
It just makes you love him more. Sorry, Rachel.
Is it my turn to talk now?
Wait, one more thing. Rachel, please go.
Okay. I like Doris Day.
Yes.
And Humphrey Bogart.
Yes.
Humphrey. What a man.
That's all you're going to say?
Yo, I mean, you guys are dominating this entire conversation.
It's my classic movie,
well,
buddy.
Well, that's great. That's great. You know, keep talking. It's cool. Whatever.
We're going to come to your stuff in a minute.
Oh, I know. And guess what?
What?
It's going to be me and you.
Yeah.
Just you and me.
Yeah.
Front hand back. Front hand back.
Run back.
Run back.
No, I like Doris Day. I like all of her movies with Rock Hudson.
Yeah, they're very cute.
You actually introduced me to those movies.
I did, because I was teaching you how to cry funny, right?
Yeah.
Cry humorously,
yeah.
I guess.
On stage, yeah. And then it's so weird because him and Gene Kelly, I like to watch Gene Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
One of the best movies ever.
Yes.
My list is getting bigger.
He's such a beautiful man.
He is.
You know, he was just so beautiful.
And he tap dances like...
Like a fiend.
Like a fool.
Like
and
what
a singer.
Tap dancing in the dictionary is.
He's such a great singer too. And
he's just perfect, but he's crazy in real life apparently.
That's
crazy workaholic.
And
the taskmaster.
He's commie.
We're going to keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, I know. But Doris Day, Humphrey Bogart. My parents think I'm weird for liking Humphrey Bogart, but I've always liked Humphrey Bogart. I love Casablanca and The Maltese Falcon and all those kinds of movies. I thought he was awesome.
I liked him best when he was with Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
I thought that's when he seemed happiest.
I thought he had really good, yeah, it's because that's when he was the happiest.
Yeah.
But I really like him in his chemistry with Ingrid. Yeah.
That was a good movie.
Yeah.
Casablanca is referenced.
That is, since the next question is, what are other classic films would you consider your favorites? From Ashley. My favorite classic movie would have to be Casablanca.
That was a great movie. You'll throw this in? This
sure.
Should be edited if you want to be.
I'm going to throw this microphone at your face.
Middle child. It can be edited.
Just don't hurt me. No, I'm not like a giant proponent of everything about the movie, but like just because of what it was in what time it was.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel Without a Cause with James
Dean.
Oh,
James Dean. I should have seen that too.
He has like such a complicated life and like you know, story and everything, so it's kind of hard to like put your thumb on what he actually was as a person.
Yeah.
But in that movie, like, it was so different from like everything else.
He's had a perpetual migraine the whole film. He was just so concentrated,
yeah.
You know?
And it was so weird. It was like an emotional performance, and things weren't usually performed so emotionally.
Yeah.
And I thought that
did you see his other two films?
I saw East of Eden.
East of Eden, yeah.
Giant.
And I did not see Giant.
Okay.
East of Eden was pretty good too, but like after I'd already seen Rebel Without a Cause, it was just so like, it was like, there's a couple of old movies I've seen when I watched them. It's just amazing because it seems like they're like apart from their time. Because a lot of old movies, you kind of watch them and it's like, oh, it's entertaining and stuff. But like some of the things they do is like cheesy and like cliche or different things like that. But like that performance, and that was definitely kind of, it felt very groundbreaking.
What about Marlon Brando? What do you feel about him? I love the movie A Streetcar Named Desire. It's another one of my favorite oldies.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I haven't seen that many of his movies. I saw Godfather.
Yeah.
And that was very well done and everything. But I haven't really seen... I know, like, a lot of actors look to him as kind of, like, the man.
The epitome. But, then, you know, he had to have those cue cards and stuff, too,
right,
later on in his life because he couldn't remember his line.
Well, he's like, well, hey.
I don't have cue cards.
I like to read biographies of movie stars just to read about their lives. And Marlon Brando is one of those that I didn't. I was like, sort of like the Audrey Hepburn. I don't really like you, and because everybody likes you. But I read his biography, Songs My Mother Taught Me, mm-hmm. and I really liked him. He's still messed up. He's still crazy and weird and all that stuff. But his biography, and I just really enjoyed it. I thought, I'm going to go watch your movies now.
Yeah. He's a really cool guy. Mm-hmm. If you could replace any actor in a classic film, who would it be?
Okay. Well, most classic films, and I feel very strongly about this, most classic films that I like, that I really, really like, I wouldn't want them to do a remake of. In most cases, like, there are a few exceptions to the rule. True Grit would be number one exception to that rule. It would be the definition in the dictionary of better. I watched the original, and I liked it because John Wayne, and he was like, it's fun and everything. But, like, a couple of things about it, it's like, I don't know what the big deal about it. Everybody's like, True Grit's the best movie ever.
Yeah.
And then when they made a remake of it, I was kind of like, why are they making a remake? Why are they doing this? You know, it's making money. That's all the reason they're doing it.
Yeah.
And then I watched it, and it was like, blows your mind. Just performances all around by everybody in that movie. It was just kind of one of those, like, rare things where everything works well.
Did you feel like the fact that you couldn't understand what he was saying most of the time took away from that?
Loved it.
You loved it?
Loved it.
You loved the gravelly marble
voice? He was just like
an
alcoholic. Yeah. He was an alcoholic, perfect. And that's how alcoholics are.
Mm-hmm. And I loved, like, I could just go down the list on things. I loved the how they shot it. I loved how they scripted it, the language they made everybody
speak.
Oh, I did,
too. I loved all of
that,
it.
That, like, just the language alone of the script almost made the entire movie.
It was very formal, but they made it sound casual.
Yeah, because it's a Western.
It's like Shakespearean. You know how the Shakespearean actors can do those lines and make it sound like real conversation? Mm-hmm. That's what they did with that Western.
But yeah, that is one of the rare examples where they remade something and it was
better.
Way better.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's like, that was pretty good. Sure, fine. That one's reasonable. But
Lord
like,
of the Rings, they had a cartoon.
Well.
And it was it was horrific. And so they made the live action ones. And
it was better.
So much better.
Well, what about movies from our generation? So now Rachel can take over and
Here we go. Yep.
Do you have any favorites there? What about acting?
Like, once again, it's sort of a long list. And it's kind of long, but it's very, like, I have a bad list and a good list.
Okay.
I know the bad list
top
already.
Top of my bad list would be Nicolas Cage.
So yes. Bad you love him?
It is almost so bad that it's like one of those things you can't take your eyes away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movie example of that would be Mega Python.
I've never even heard of that.
If you've never seen that movie, please watch it.
The thing is, not to defend him because you're right, but think of one of the greatest romantic comedies of all time is Moonstruck.
Happened One Night.
No, Moonstruck.
And I was going to say you've got mail, but you know.
It's Cher and Nicolas Cage. It's a wonderful film. It's nearly perfect in its execution.
Didn't Cher win?
I think so.
An Academy Award for Best Actress for it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film, and you're thinking.
Never seen
but
it.
But I think it's because Nicolas Cage is being Nicolas Cage. He's so intense.
Well, then there's Adaptation, too, which was, you know, Oscar nominated. I don't even know if it won Oscars or anything.
I guess there's
like that.
A great film in every bad actor, maybe?
Or a good film.
In every,
and that's it.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's like an accident every once in a while. Like,
I don't know, but he is remarkable, isn't he?
It's almost bad to a remarkable extent, for sure.
And now he's been cast as the pilot in Left Behind.
I was so hoping he'd go for Nikolai Carpathia. Same initials.
He would have been perfect. He would have been perfect. And I would have paid money to see it, honestly.
Yeah.
That would have been the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah. He just doesn't turn anything down.
No.
And then
there's
the
that great
man.
YouTube.
Yeah.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Put them in correct order.
Very good.
Can I get a room?
No, what does she say?
Please.
Very good. You know your alphabet.
Yeah, it's like people on the rest of the cast is kind of like, what is happening? But anyway, back to good actors. That's a long list because there's a lot of really, really good actors.
Throw one out there.
One of them I've liked for a long time. He is in some movies that are like strange and that I don't like the movie at all. But as far as like his ability to act, and like his ability to act like right from the start of his career, pretty much was Johnny Depp.
Once
again, the thing inside me that, you know, everybody loves Johnny Depp.
I know
but
what you're saying.
As far as like the way that he can put emotion through, and that's like one of the hardest things to do in acting is to be able to get that right. And like, and to me anyway, he's one of like, he's inspirational in like how he does that. There's numerous other good actors. Right now I'm kind of on a kick with liking Benedict Cumberbatch, who's the man.
What's your firstborn going to be named?
My firstborn child's initials will be BEF, which stands for, wait, no, that's,
no, that's wrong.
BCF.
BCF, yeah.
I ask forgiveness. But Benedict Cumberbatch Fabish, and that is Dibs.
It's been done. What, and your second child.
And the second child will just have to be the name of the second. Benedict Cumberbatch.
I thought you said it was going to be like
and then the third, yeah, we'll go
George Foreman.
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba. Both are kind of got fame from BBC television shows. They had careers before that, and they were amazing before that, but that's kind of their break. As far as female actresses, right now one of my favorites is Jennifer Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of those ones, again, that just seems like a very honest actor, and I really appreciate that in actors. Some people, when they're acting, it kind of feels like they're going for the paycheck, or they're, you know, really just typing themselves up. And
did you see Silver Linings Playbook?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was fabulous.
Oh,
I did too.
I'm so glad that you did.
My
it was wonderful. Yeah, really, really. They were.
No.
I honestly thought, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis, anytime he acts, he deserves an Oscar.
Right.
But sure. I honestly thought Bradley Cooper deserved it.
He did amazing. I mean, that was
compared
one of
to the other things that Bradley Cooper has done. If
this
you're
is
looking
the best
at,
film
yes.
that he's ever done.
Right. And
ever.
Like you're saying, with Daniel Day, it's sort of like Meryl Streep. It's like, well, give it to him next year because he'll be in another film that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But Bradley Cooper, this was the best you've done
ever.
Yeah. And that was another one of those movies where everything, just the combination of actors and everybody just fit
was
so well together.
Amazing.
Chemistry is one of the words I was looking for there.
Right. I liked his friend. He was so...
Chris Tucker.
He was like happy. He's like, I'm not okay.
I'm not okay.
Oh, yeah. He's like, it's killing me. I'll get out in the garage and I'll listen to Metallica. It's And Bradley Cooper with a disability is like, you got a problem.
Yeah. What that's part of what I liked about it. The people who were supposedly the ones with a disability were the only honest ones in the film.
But you see, everybody had problems and everybody had a specific problem.
They were just
Jennifer
more open
Lawrence
with
had
theirs.
Depression, and then Bradley Cooper was bipolar and his dad had OCD and his mom had... She had some issues too. The mom had issues, and then Chris Tucker, and then the gambling problems. Everybody had problems in this movie.
But
it's
real.
Personified that.
Yeah.
Everybody has problems. Everybody.
Yeah. It was very well done. I mean, you could get on the list with her movies. I'm pretty much a fan of every movie of hers that I've seen.
So your top two current actors are both native Kentuckians.
That's true, and I am currently a native Kentuckian. I was born in Peoria, Illinois, but I claim.
You can claim it.
Sure.
It's good. We have plenty.
I'm working on my Southern charm currently.
Are you working on your Southern accent?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
All right.
Oh, good job. Well, I know you share a love of Tom Hardy with me.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a favorite movie of his?
Probably my favorite, and it's not as much his fault that it's my favorite, but I do love his performance in it. It was Inception. That movie is just fantastic.
Yes. You need to see the background on my phone real quick. You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bit bigger, darling.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of my favorite lines in that movie. I mean, not alone his favorite, hit one of his lines I like the most, but just out of everybody. That's just a fabulous movie. And I do like him in other movies, too. I'm trying to...
I like him as a person. I like Tom
She talks
Hardy.
About him every single podcast.
I do.
You had that look in your eye. Like
I know. I was
changed.
Sort of zoning out. I was like, I'm not on vacation in my mind. We're just going to Tom Hardy Land for a little
your,
while.
That's okay.
Your mind palace.
That's okay. You took over the classic movies. I'm taking over Tom Hardy.
No, so we could talk more on this. I think as an actor, because it was funny the other day, this might be off topic, but I was discussing hairstyles with somebody, and for some reason I was like, well, Tom Hardy's hairstyle. And they're like, they didn't really know who he was, which is... unforgivable, but so I was on my phone like going I just like put Tom
Showing
Hardy
pictures.
And like I was going through and like the I guess you could say the dedication that he has to like characters is amazing I was going through pictures and like is that the same guy because he's super skinny, he's huge, he's like the biggest person you've
and
ever seen.
Literally, he said he is the laziest person in the world, that if he could sleep on a couch all day, he would and get away with it. He totally would.
Wow.
He hates doing anything.
What about?
That's me, too.
But he's ripped. He's ripped, though.
I am ripped. I guess you can't see me. So
Ben's
very
ripped.
Sure.
There you go.
What about Warrior? That's one of Rachel's favorites.
Ben did not, we've already discussed this
really?
In our private lives, not outside of podcasts.
Uh-huh.
He was not that big of a fan of Warrior.
It had a certain actor in it.
He does not like Nick Nolte.
Well, okay, impromptu, defend your position.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Rachel, why do you like Warrior?
Because it ripped my heart out and stomped on it.
Yeah.
And I love movies that do that. The movie something about that bond between family and even though you go through these struggles and whatnot and the alcoholism theme.
Right.
You know, I've had plenty of experience, not myself, but mm-hmm. around people like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just it hit so many chords with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just beautiful.
She was a puddle when
I
that was
a puddle.
Over.
It was,
she was a puddle.
It was one of those moments where you don't ever, like with you in Titanic. You,
right.
You
can't, I didn't ever want to see it again.
You can't change the experience that you have.
Emotional impact.
It was so, and I'm not the same person after I saw it.
Yeah. I almost feel bad for not like
no, it's
having
okay.
it
it's
on
okay.
the, because of how much you like it.
No, it is totally fine.
Okay. So why don't you like it?
It's really hard to say. I was terrified of Nick Nolte the whole time because he scares me. And I'm sorry, Nick Nolte. I don't know. Maybe because of that fear of like, I didn't know when he was going to appear. Maybe I wasn't able to kind of engage with the movie because I was constantly scanning left and right. So he was coming. I just knew it. He was going to be in the scene somewhere.
All right. And it's an underdog story, too.
Yeah. Maybe if someone would like go and edit his parts out. And maybe.
Or just warn you. Say, hey, here comes Nick. Close your eyes. Maybe you just don't like actors named Nick.
That'd be true.
Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Nolte. Mm-hmm. All right. So enough of Tom Hardy. What about filmmakers, directors? Who do you admire?
Once again, that's I guess not that long of a list. There's one of the filmmakers I liked made a couple of my favorite movies, like Big Country and Roman Holiday as a William mm-hmm. Wyler.
Yeah, I like him too.
And it was funny because there was for like a year or two, me and my friends would just watch old movies on like a day of the week.
Oh yeah, and you had a classic movie day.
Yeah, and sometimes like I would be bringing the movie, and sometimes I wouldn't, and I wouldn't really know a lot about the movie. We just bring it and watch it based off of recommendations or whatever. And it was funny because like at the end of some movie, I'd be like, man, I really like that movie. I wonder who directed it. And it was
William Wyler.
Like for like a streak of like a couple of weeks in a row, it was like William Wyler. And I was like, well, okay, I guess I really like William Wyler.
Mm-hmm.
Big Country was one of those movies that when you watched it, Gregory Peck was in it. It just kind of felt like not part of its time. It was just like, it just seemed very apart from everything else that was kind of in that same time period, mm-hmm. as far as quality and originality and everything, like emotion in it. And as far as more modern, I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
There was a departure in one of his most recent movies.
I don't even want to talk about it. We've already done Defend Your Position with The Dark Knight Rises.
No defense needed. There was several. I probably should watch it a second time because I watched it on opening night, and then I also sat on the front row,
which for that movie
was rough.
Yeah.
And then I think for like the first opening night and maybe for like weeks after, they like hadn't fixed the sound for Bane. Like I remember like when they were pre-screens and everything, like people were like, we can't even understand what he's saying. And so I read somewhere that they went back and kind of fixed it like while they were still kind of releasing it.
They should have just put subtitles underneath of him.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked the voice that he did, but just like,
I
couldn't get to the words. And like I said, I love
True Grit.
Okay,
what's the difference between True Grit?
Because it almost didn't seem, with True Grit, I could imagine a person sounding like that.
Well, and you could also see his mouth move.
And you could see his mouth moving, maybe.
And with his mouth not moving.
Yeah, with Bane, it was more contrived.
Yeah. Which I like respected like the decision that was made. I respected the voice. I respected, you know, kind of it fit with the character and everything.
Right.
And so like I had no problems with that. People were like, what is the voice? You know, it's just throwing me completely out of the movie. It didn't really throw me out of the movie. I just, like, it just kind of, I couldn't understand it. And then, like I said, I don't know if it's because I was sitting right next to the screen, but some of the pacing just seemed rushed.
Right.
Some of the actors whose characters I already loved in previous movies kind of seemed, like, once again, I'm kind of scared to say this, but as a middle child, I'm fearing retribution. Like, some of their performances, like, Michael Caine is an amazing actor. He's one of my favorite actors. He almost, like, it almost felt, and like once again, I should probably watch it again before I really say this, but like it almost felt like he was mailing it in on some of the lines. And that's kind of a harsh thing to say about such a great actor. And I should probably watch it again before I like officially say that's what I think about it. So we'll just kind of leave that as
a maybe. You probably should stop talking.
I'll stop talking about it. But I do really love Christopher Nolan, and maybe, yeah, I've loved every one of his movies, and maybe I just had him up too high.
No, that's...
I don't know if it's possible to have him. Also, Tom Hooper.
There you go.
The director, Tom Hooper?
Yes.
We'll go
and
ahead.
And the artist, you know.
I think every movie of his I've just loved.
You and I watched King's Speech together, right? And Rachel left. We kept saying, watch it with us, watch it. And so from then on,
it was like midnight.
Shucks.
That is such an amazing movie.
It was. I wish you could have been there with us when we saw it the first time. Because we were like, look at that shot. Stop it. Watch. Look at that shot.
Beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Everything.
Yeah.
My bad.
But yeah, that's great.
That's good. I'm glad that you mentioned all three of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just saying.
I can throw in Steven Spielberg.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, let's do that. I like him.
No, we've been running over.
Okay.
TV shows go without saying, really. You've gotten me hooked on some of the greatest shows I've ever seen. Well, Sherlock.
Absolutely.
Luther.
Absolutely.
And you share this responsibility with Ashley. Arrested Development. Tell us what you think is so enthralling about Arrested Development.
Why do we like it so much?
I think it is
because they're horrible people.
They're horrible people. And like, I think you can see like qualities about people in your life that you're like, just don't understand. You're like, what in the world? And so like they kind of play to that. I think it's probably one of the wittiest shows ever written.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking from, I've only seen, you know, the original Arrested Development. At this point, I still have yet to see the Netflix
series.
So I cannot vouch for that as much right now. But the writing in it is just so, the pacing, but it's like has such a pace to it, and it's so speedy, uh-huh. And so you would think that they would lose humor somewhere.
Right.
But like everything, just like it's a well-oiled machine.
And I like
it's
the commitment to running gags.
Yes.
And things that they set up early on that Absolutely. They pay off with later. I love the detail work.
Absolutely.
And some of the lines are just fantastic.
And the performances actors. And the actors.
I was going to say, delivery.
I think Job's like character. Tobias and Job, I think, are my favorites.
Okay,
but,
that was going to be the next question that you were asked, is who your favorite character was.
Read ahead. No.
he read ahead. You always read ahead.
No, but like Job's character, because Tobias is just an amazing character. He's just hilarious and like it just everything about him. But if you think about Job's character, he's playing like kind of an arrogant person.
Right.
But he's also kind of self-confident, but also self-conscious at the same time.
Yes.
And
he's a softy when you get right.
He's kind of a softy, but he plays kind of like this fancy, rich, like
magician. I love his white linen pants that he always wears,
and his hair's kind of flipped back just ever so slightly.
Yes,
Michael. I've made a huge mistake.
What is your favorite character, Ashley?
Oh, I think I'm a Buster fan.
Buster.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I love Buster. He's so good. Probably one. My favorite
You're doing
season.
Buster right now.
I am. I'm doing it. My favorite season is season one, and I think one of my favorite episodes. I've got two favorite episodes. The first one is Bringing Up Buster, where Michael has to babysit Buster.
And the shots. That
and
they
the shots.
Use.
Yes, and the shots where Buster is sitting there listening, but the camera just pans out, and then you see that Buster's there. I think that's hysterical.
Yeah.
And the other one is with J. Michael Weatherby with the teaching the lessons.
Yes, that one's really funny. Yeah. I would have to say Lucille's my favorite. I don't know why.
Lucille's?
Lucille one.
Which one of the three Lucilles?
Not the Lucille. Or not
Lucille 2?
Not Lucille 2.
Although I love Liza Minnelli.
Oh, yeah. She's great in it. It's just, she makes a cameo in the new season. And all they do to try to confuse her, they just spin her around and she collapses. It's so funny.
So bad.
She's got severe vertigo in the show. Yes. But I like Lucille the mom and her relationship with Oscar. That is what really sold it for me is whenever Oscar, I'm sorry, I'm laughing just thinking of it.
Hello,
whenever Oscar would look at Buster and say something fatherly to him and the music started playing.
Son.
This is the funniest thing
for
I've
British
ever
eyes
seen.
Only.
Yes.
That was another gag that was funny.
That is a good one too. And they have a new gag in season four with the song. And I wish I could remember the song, but it's for Job. And whenever Job has this really solemn look on his face, the song starts playing. Oh, gosh. It's great. It's fantastic. But anyways, before we move on to our final segment and game time, let's take a quick break for our featured musician of the week.
This week, we're featuring the music of George Fabish. He's an up-and-coming artist who originally hails from Peoria, Illinois, and has made Kentucky his home for the past few years. He also made his feature film debut as one of the very, very bad dates that Catherine goes on in our second movie, The Hepburn Girls. And he just happens to be one of the younger brothers labeled The Rest of You, along with Ben. Listen and enjoy Fragile.
Fragile and it looks
wondering what your superpower is.
Sultriness.
Mm. Okay. Okay. That's what you're going to go with?
Oh, wow. Maybe the superpower of never being serious? It doesn't seem like a very good superpower.
No, I don't think so.
What do you do better than anybody else?
I can fly.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
The superpower of never answering a question.
Yeah.
With a straight face.
I am actually really good at that.
Yes, you are.
Avoiding the topic.
Your superpower is evading.
I can evade. Case in point, I will change names and everything to protect myself and the innocent. There was one point I was riding in a vehicle, and someone asked me a question about something that we had just experienced, once again being vague.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, they had asked what the definition of... Somebody had said, the definition of gumbo is okra.
Okay.
And that seemed, I was like, that can't be. No. I mean, like, that's impossible. I was like, no, that's wrong.
Uh-huh.
And I'm always right.
Uh-huh.
In this one case, it was wrong. So, like, on the way to the car.
The definition of gumbo is okra?
It is.
Really?
Yeah. Another fact for y'all.
What?
Yeah. And I was
wrong. I know what okra is, but I... Why?
Yeah, and I was like, because they were like, gumbo, you know, it's going to have okra in it and this and that. And I was like, oh, I don't really like okra. Like, what? Gumbo is okra? I was like, no, it's not. So anyway, I looked it up on Google, and I was getting into the car, and I was still, like, looking it up. And then somebody's like, well, what did you think about that? And I kind of really wasn't in the mood to answer that question, and I just found out what the definition of it was. And so I was like, definition of gumbo is okra. And that just completely took the conversation away, and I was never asked that question again.
Oh, nice.
It was great.
Nice.
That happens a lot, though. I've done that with several times. Like, for example, we were me and some friends were around a campfire, and one of my buddies was going to ask me a question. I knew what he was going to ask me because it was a leading thing that was going to embarrass me, and I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And because he had kind of been like heading that way with stuff. And so like he sent me this question at me, and I'd already prepared a counter question.
Nice.
Which I knew was going to like send people at him like heat-seeking uh-huh. missiles, and
right.
the whole group was going to turn on him.
Right.
And it was kind of like judgment
right.
for him attempting to try to embarrass me.
Uh-huh.
And it worked so well. Like, I knew who the people were that were going to, like, just instantly spin onto him.
Nice.
And it worked like a charm.
All right.
Man, he's got these little pawns, you know?
He does.
Yeah.
And, they don't even realize
mind
it.
Mind games.
Yeah, it is.
Ben's
he's
superpower.
Good at mind games.
Face
mind
off.
Games.
No.
See? Wow. Did you see what happened there? You were gone.
She looked away.
I did. Nicolas Cage is in that movie, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yes.
I can't.
And John Travolta. It's like the ultimate. There's one scene in there. You stop recording. There's one scene in there that John Travolta's the cop who Nicolas Cage was trying to kill in the beginning of the movie.
And they
and he shot
faces.
Him. And when he shot him, he was riding on a carousel
what?
With his son. John Travolta and his son were riding on this carousel together. And Nicolas Cage was out in this field far away going to snipe him. And he shot him and hit him in the shoulder, and it killed his son. And it didn't kill him at all. And so, of course, there's this rage built up. And Nicolas Cage is this really bad guy. And so finally there's a scene where John Travolta like kind of corners him in this uh-huh. hangar or something.
Yeah.
And for some reason there's an, I'm doing Nicolas Cage hand movements.
You really are. I wish everybody could see it right now.
I know. Well,
for some reason there's an afterburner, just an afterburner sitting in this, and you know, the thing at the back of a jet sends out flames.
Right. Right.
Sitting
Thank
in
you.
This hangar, and John Travolta kind of corners him, and Nicolas Cage has a gun, and he has a gun, and somehow Nicolas Cage does not have a gun.
They're facing off.
They're facing off, like the first part of the face-off. And so Nicolas Cage is down on his knees, like, go ahead and shoot me, lawman, whatever. And John Travolta's standing above him with the gun pointed at him, and they're kind of going back and forth, like, bad guy, good guy. And then Nicolas Cage has been sitting there like this, and somehow John Travolta allows him just to go ahead and reach behind him. Like, you know, like, why would a guy, if you're holding somebody at gunpoint, you don't let him to reach behind themselves. And pulls out a knife and, like, attempts to, like, go stab him with it while he's sitting there holding him with a gun. And so, like, he shoots him, like, non-lethally or something. And it causes, like, Nicolas Cage to, like, go spinning around. And he does this spinning thing where you see him, while he's spinning, look. And he's, like, you know, like, spotting where he's going to go land. And there's this panel sitting there that's hooked up to the afterburner in
oh,
this
no.
hangar
oh,
that has
no.
a button on it that turns the afterburner on. And so somehow, while spinning and flailing after getting shot, he hits that exact button and goes into the path where the afterburner is shooting out. And it sends him flying back in the air. And it's probably one of the greatest shots of the film. If you can find that one scene and watch it, it's amazing. Because, like, the face he's doing, and, like, I don't know what's happening. And
he's just flailing.
It's amazing.
That reminds me of The Quick and the Dead. and I hate that movie so much with Sharon Stone and Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe and
Gene Hackman. And I guess it was Sharon Stone that shoots Gene Hackman in the very end, and he does a backflip after he gets shot and then just dies. And I was like,
You're Gene Hackman.
You're not 90 years old. You can't do backflips anymore, even when you're dying. I'm sorry.
Even with Oscars,
you can't do it. Okay, guys.
Game time.
It is time
for the game.
I don't even know what this game is.
Nobody knows. Okay, so Ben told me, and he actually mentioned it earlier, that three of his favorite filmmakers are Christopher Nolan, William Wyler, and Tom Hooper.
Well done.
I have taglines for movies that each of these guys have directed.
Ooh.
Your job is to figure out what movie they belong to. If you need a hint, I'll tell you who directed it.
Are there time limits?
Well, I would like to go home tonight sometime, so
use my
a
phone
little
note.
Bit. Okay, so we're going to start off with Ben. Are you ready for this?
Yes. Are you involved in this?
I guess so, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's playing too. Some memories are best forgotten.
Memento?
Very nice.
That was good.
That was very fast.
So we're guessing the movie title, is that it?
Yes.
And we're not guessing who directed it?
No, you don't have to. It's really self-explanatory.
I could go ahead and throw that on if you want. Do I get bonus points?
Sure, go ahead.
Christopher Nolan.
Okay, everybody knows that.
Actors? Okay,
so. Okay, this one is for Ashley.
Okay.
The Tale of the Christ.
What are my choices? What am I...
You have to say what
the
movie it is. Yeah, The Tale of the Christ.
Passion of the Christ?
No. No. William Wyler, Christopher Nolan, and Tom Hooper did not
direct it. Is it The Robe?
No.
I have no idea.
It was directed by William Wyler.
The Tale of the Christ. The greatest story ever told?
No.
I have no idea.
Ben-Hur.
Oh, yeah.
That's a rough tagline.
It is.
That's what the tagline thing said on IMDb.
Okay, yeah. No, I'll take your word for it.
It's just weird.
Okay.
Can I give her half of my point?
No. Middle child wants to share.
This is funny, friends.
Sure, you can give her half your point.
We're currently tied at 0.5 points apiece.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay, this one is also for Ben.
Okay.
A friendship that became a rivalry.
Warrior? No.
None of those directors directed Warrior. What is wrong with you guys?
Ed Hardy.
No.
A friendship that became a rivalry. Can you tell us who was in it?
I can tell you who directed it. That's the only hint I'm allowed to give you.
Okay, who directed it?
Let me think for a second.
Friendship that became a rivalry.
He hasn't directed that many movies, guys.
Batman.
No.
The other Batman.
No.
The third Batman.
No.
I narrowed it down for you, Ben.
Wow.
Can I give it to you? Can I just tell you?
Well, I know it's Christopher Nolan.
Inception.
No.
I'm just, that's all the ones I know.
No.
I could go down the list and probably get it right eventually.
No, we've already done Memento.
It's not The Following.
No, it's The Prestige, guys.
Hey.
Oh, he directed that?
All of them.
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
0 points for
that's, you. That is correct. Shame.
We shared the 0 points on that one.
Okay, you ready for this one?
No.
This one, you have to get this one.
We are currently tied at 0.5 points.
Thank you.
It takes leadership to confront a nation's fear. It takes friendship to conquer your own.
Oh, come on. Is it The King's Speech?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. I thought it was Find Your Voice. I thought that was the tagline for King's Speech.
Well, they had a bunch of taglines.
I picked the hard one.
So I picked the hard one. But it said to confront a nation's fear. I figured, you know.
Now we're tied at 1 point apiece, since I'm giving you back your half point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Romance in Romantic Rome.
Oh, come on.
I know, that one's easy.
Can I waste time here or just Roman Holiday?
Yeah, there you go.
Good job.
Very nice. William Wyler.
The score is currently 2-1.
Thank you.
You sound like a goth.
In favor, Ben Favish.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to a world without rules.
Who directed it?
Christopher Nolan.
Oh, Inception?
No.
I don't know, guys. I don't watch his movies.
You have watched.
Dark Knight.
Yes, there you go.
Which one?
The Dark Knight.
Okay, not The Dark Knight
Welcome
Rises.
Welcome to a world. No.
There's The Dark Knight and then The Dark Knight Rises, right? That's what the third one's
called?
Yeah. Okay.
But you said The Dark Knight, and I said yes. And then
stop
you said
there.
Which one?
I'll just stop
just
talking.
Stop, just stop.
You won.
A world without rules. The Joker.
Dark Knight.
Come on, The Joker. Okay, whatever.
Could we get an update on the scores?
It is currently 2-2.
In favor of?
Ben Favish.
And Ashley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so anyways, Ben, you're going to get this one, no doubt.
Thank you.
Your mind is the scene of the crime.
That would be The Inception?
Yes. Yes, it would be.
The one I keep guessing. So that means that's out of the running.
Yep, it's out of the running. All right. Are you ready?
No.
You're probably never going to get this one.
Oh, great.
Fight. Dream. Hope. Love.
It's not Warrior, is it?
Is he? Is
none of these people directed Warrior.
Right. In her defense, Tom Hardy was in several of these.
No. Okay. Backing up. The directors are. Okay. Christopher Nolan did not direct Warrior.
Okay.
Tom Hooper also did not. Warrior is not in this game. Okay.
Could I have Warrior for 500?
William Wyler did not. He's been dead. He did not direct Warrior.
I don't
Fight,
know.
Hope. I don't. Can I have a.
Tom Hooper!
Tom Hooper directed it.
Yes.
I've already guessed the King's Speech, right?
Yes.
What are you mouthing? Les Mis.
Okay.
See, I never saw
Les
Mis.
Gets the point. It doesn't matter. You don't have to get.
Okay.
The game is over.
Ben wins.
I win. Okay. It was a draw. Rachel wins this one.
Wow. This is the worst game we've ever done.
I'm sorry.
We did poorly, Ben. We did poorly.
No, Ben did well.
I did poorly.
You did poorly.
I need to watch some of these.
Is it Warrior? No. Warrior is not in this game. I promise you that.
Why not?
Oh, I was just, when in doubt, default to Tom Hardy with Rachel.
Just kidding. Surely she'd give you like a, yeah. Oh, yeah, he was in that.
I just need to guess. Tom Hardy?
No.
Iron Man.
Okay. Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. Man. Robert Downey Jr.
Point.
Yes, you did.
He did. Ben wins.
All right. Okay, well, I think that wraps up our interview. And Ben, you win. I'll wear the cone of shame for the game.
Learn your lesson.
I did learn my lesson. Watch movies. Watch more modern movies.
Yeah.
So anything you would like to say before we wrap this up about your experience acting or behind the sceneing or
how
whatever?
Much you like us?
I was actually thinking about it earlier today, and I was thinking about... Because one of the questions you all said you might ask was about directors, and I was thinking about my favorite directors, and I was thinking about, I was actually going to look this up so I would sound more knowledgeable, but I don't know the name of him, but the guy that directed Faith Like Potatoes, whoever was in charge
movie.
Of that was a fantastic movie.
Yeah,
it was.
Probably one of the better Christian movies that I've ever seen.
Yeah, agreed.
So if I knew his name, I would throw his name on like the best Christian directors.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But from my experiences with Christian films, I would put, it's a short list, I'd put you all and him on that list.
Oh, wow.
And that's not just to say that. Y'all are great to work with and for, and I really like your films.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We like that you're in our films.
Yeah.
Yay.
This is a happy ending.
It is.
It is. Well, on that note,
this is Ashley.
And this is Rachel.
And this has been Fabish.
Saying goodnight.
And good luck. We gotta get a new one of those.
Good morning, glories.
Learn your lesson.
I'm learning my lesson.
Okay.
You should have read ahead.
It's actually my fault, because I might have said something and that triggered it. Well,
yeah,
I wasn't
it
reading
did.
The script, so.
It's okay.
I will sit here in shame for a while.
Learn.
Put on your cone of shame.
Be professional. Olivia's here. Let's be professional.
Sorry, this is hilarious. Okay. Since we just finished up talking about songs.
Do you want me to do it?
No, I can't. I can do it. Speaking of
she's gone. She's gone. This is going to be edited.
Let's Sorry. Talk about Duck Dynasty.
Or I could leave it in
no.
she can bear her shame.
Bear my shame. My cone of shame.
Always read ahead. And this is why you always read ahead.
Okay. I can't look at you when I ask this question. Stop laughing.